Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains September 19th through the 24th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Welcome to Devils in the Dark with me, Helen Anderson.
And me, Danny Howard.
We're two best friends entering the world of true crime.
We'll be sharing the stories of some of the worst and most horrific murder cases in history, and we're taking you along for the ride.
In this episode, we're looking at the socialite and serial killer, Madame Lalaurie. Now, we're doing things a little bit differently today. We're going way back in time to look at the slave owner and serial killer, Madame Lalaurie. You might recognise that name from American Horror Story. It was from the series Coven, which was probably one of my favourites. But that was inspired by true things, like true occurrences. So it's not factual. What happens in Coven, you know, wasn't entirely true. And they do mix and match some other New Orleans history in with that series.
Season. Never watched it.
Did you not?
I watch everything. Mm-hmm. I watched the first two seasons of American Horror Story. Mm-hmm. I can't watch things like that by myself.
No.
Baker has no interest in it.
Oh.
I'll get nightmares.
Oh,
like, I know it's not even that scary, but like, it's just anything that's really tense or like I'm waiting to be scared. I don't like it. It puts me on edge and it just gives me like anxious dreams.
That feeling of being on edge.
Yeah.
I really like it.
What is enjoyable about that?
I don't know.
Like,
it's like how some people like getting their foot rubbed.
Yeah, I don't
like
that either.
Some people don't like that. I like being put on edge.
I get so in my own head about stuff like that. When I watched Saw 2, I had nightmares for probably like 2 or 3 weeks. And like Saw 2, it's not even scary. It's just, you know, horrific. But I'll get so in my own head about like, I'm in bed by myself. Somebody's going to come in and steal me in a pig mask and I'm going to wake up covered in needles. Oh my God. And like, yeah, and I just, it's too much. So I just have to sort of keep media like that away from me. I saw a really big spider.
Oh God.
In my utility room the other day. And I, like, it was so big. I just went in to put laundry in the, and it was right next to the washing machine. And I just dropped the laundry and went, oh my God.
Left. Straight back out again.
I did, walked straight back out. Laundry's on the floor. Mentioned it to Baker. And then I got up for like my third wee of the night because every pregnant person will know that feeling. And for some reason, that wee was where did that spider go? Because I didn't ask Baker to do anything with it. And by the time
still
he went
there.
In there, it wouldn't have been where I left it. So where was it? And then also I was like, it looked really meaty. And then I was like, it was carrying eggs. So not only is there this big spider coming for me while I'm having this, you know, unprotected wee, don't even have my glasses on, I can't see shit, middle of the night. It's also carrying eggs. And the eggs are probably going to hatch. And then they're going to have millions of giant spiders in my house. Did not sleep for the rest of the night.
Oh my God, it must be difficult being in your brain.
It was quite stressful. I woke up, like when Baker woke up in the morning, he was like, oh, are you okay? And I'm like, no, I couldn't stop thinking about that spider. He went, oh, I got rid of it. Like,
and you're like,
it wasn't even there.
Fuck's sake, Baker.
Yeah. So, yeah, this is all going to be new to me.
Yep.
But I will enjoy, it'll be nice because I bang on about Criminal Minds and shit like that all the time. Mm-hmm. You've never seen it. Mm-hmm. You can bang on about American Horror Story
to
me.
I won't be banging on about it because it's not really completely accurate. And the story,
well, obviously,
is actually, there's a lot more to it than what was portrayed. But Madame Lalaurie was a slave owner and did some really horrendous things to the enslaved people she kept in her house. So if you would like to avoid hearing about this, then please do skip this episode and check out another one of our episodes. Let's set the scene. It's a warm April evening in Louisiana, New Orleans, in 1834. Fire marshals have been called to a blaze in the home of Madame Lalaurie at 1140 Royal Street. When the marshals arrive at the mansion, they find the kitchen alight. Inside the kitchen, they discover that the house cook, a 70-year-old black enslaved woman, has been chained to the stove by her ankle. She tells the authorities that she's been chained up whilst Madame Lalaurie was busying about saving her furniture, but not all was what it seemed. The cook admitted to starting the fire herself, which was a suicide attempt, she said. She'd been watching several enslaved people, been taken up to the attic for punishment, never to be seen again. She didn't know what was happening to them, but she knew it was a fate worse than death. Meanwhile, bystanders rushed into the mansion to help, working with the marshals to make sure everyone was evacuated from the building. Madame Lalaurie refused to give them the key to the attic, so the door was broken down, and what the neighbours and authorities saw that night shocked them to their core. Seven enslaved people, horribly mutilated and emaciated, suspended by spiked iron collars, limbs torn from their bodies and unable to walk, had been locked in Madame Lalaurie's attic for what could have been months. And this was just the beginning.
Oh my God, I did not see that coming.
So let's go back to the start. Okay, so this is a really interesting story. I've always had quite a thing for history, but I don't want to do it a disservice, so please be patient with me because I'm trying to do my best here.
It's an important story to tell.
It is.
So, as saying that, I don't actually know what happens in the story, but I think anything with this sort of subject matter where people own people is always very delicate.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there's the issue of race here as well. It's going to be a strong theme. So there's some very delicate subjects that we're going to be looking at. Like, I know for me, I always feel a bit sort of extra icky with slave ownership. I'm probably not as clued up about the American history of slave ownership as I should be, because the sort of history that has been passed down to me through my family is obviously from the Caribbean islands, where we descend from people who were owned.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I'm a mixed race person and I come from some white Caribbeans that obviously probably did own people at some point, and that can be quite a difficult pill to swallow. It's more common than you think with Caribbean ancestry, for obvious reasons why. So we're all in this together, and I trust you, Helen Anderson.
Thank you. Marie Delphine McCarty was born in New Orleans on March 19th, 1787, to Louis Barthélemy de McCarty and Marie Jeanne Lirable. Delphine was named after her mother Marie, but preferred to be called Delphine. The McCarty family originally came from Ireland, moving to the USA around 1730 during the French colonial period. They had a strong military background, and her dad was even knighted as the Chevalier of the Royal and Military Order of St. Louis, which was a big deal. Big deal back then. Both Louis and Marie were very well known in the town they lived in. They had a huge 1,344-acre plantation.
That's massive.
Yep. And they lived next door to a wealthy count. Delphine's uncle was the governor of the Spanish American provinces of Louisiana, and her cousin was the mayor of New Orleans. So you could summarise that they were important and they had quite a lot of money. So
this was like high society. Yeah. She's well connected.
She's in there with the people.
And she's a white girl?
Yeah.
Okay.
They came from Ireland.
You don't often hear about Ireland, the Irish going across and being well received. That's not a story you often hear. But they have French names. So are they French-Irish? I don't know how that works. That's another history lesson for another day.
they moved from Ireland 50 years prior. So because they moved to Louisiana, where it's French, they would have probably adopted the French like forename. The surname is still McCarthy, which is pretty Irish.
Because you just sort of think, like all the sort of history or like films and, you know, things that Irish going across to America were treated worse than dogs sometimes.
But they had military backgrounds, so
they were still quite fancy.
Yeah.
Oh, it's interesting.
Yeah. I know, right?
It is.
It's so interesting. So Delphine's mother, Marie, was known as one of the best hostesses in town. And apparently she loved to throw huge parties until the early hours of the morning. And she loved to prank people.
She was a scamp.
She's a funny old gal.
Marie.
Yeah.
If you've been thinking about getting serious with your money, like actually serious, now's the time. The Motley Fool is offering new members 50% off their iconic stock recommendation service, Stock Advisor. This is the same service that's crushed the market with recommendations that have returned 1,057% since inception, compared to the S&P 500's 180% over that same period. This isn't guesswork. The Motley Fool has a track record of finding companies before they become household names. So if you want to invest smarter and you like saving money while doing it, go to fool.com/listen to claim your 50% off discount off a 1-year term of Stock Advisor. Again, that's fool.com/listen. Returns of 1,057% are from the Motley Fool's product Stock Advisor and measured against S&P 500 returns of 180% as of July 10th, 2025. Past performance is not an indicator of future results. All investing involves a risk of loss. Individual investment results may vary.
Feel off, tired, moody? You might be missing minerals because 99% of us are. Concentrace Daily Mineral Powder helps support energy, mood, and immunity from the inside out. Go to TraceMinerals.com and feel the difference minerals make.
Now, there are a couple of important things to note about Delphine's childhood. First, when she was very young, an uncle of hers was killed by the enslaved people he was holding on his land. There was a rumour that her parents were, but that was debunked because they died at separate times. And that's just a myth. So okay. If you ever hear that, it's not true.
It's not true.
It's not true. And then when Delphine was 4 years old, something very important happened. The Haitian Revolution. So that meant that enslaved people had liberated themselves from their captors, which was amazing. But it had a pretty terrible knock-on effect. Because now that white slave owners all over the south of the US and the Caribbean were paranoid about revolution at their own front door, these uprisings had the knock-on effect of slave owners abusing enslaved people even more horrifically because they were worried they might fight back. In those days, there were rights. I'm doing the
air quotes,
I suppose. And they were called slave codes. One in particular for the French colonies was called Code Noir, which was a decree originally passed by French King Louis XIV in 1685, defining the conditions of slavery.
Let's face it, these rules aren't to benefit.
No, but I was about to say, if you actually look at them, they are quite questionable, especially when it comes to religion. There were some things in there that you could say, okay, that might be for the protection of the slaves, but at the end of the day, the ulterior motive was...
It was just to make them feel better.
Yeah.
It was an ego massage,
And it was also about conditioning them to fit into their idea of society. So they had to forget their previous religions and their beliefs. And they had to, nope, you can't do that now because this says so.
Because you're not a person.
Yeah, exactly.
You are property.
So some examples of what was on Code Noir. Masters must give food, quantities specified, and clothes to their slaves, even to those who were sick or old.
Oh, lovely. Even to those who are sick or old.
Yep. A slave husband and wife and their prepubescent children under the same master were not to be sold separately. If a master had falsely accused a slave of a crime and as a result the slave had been put to death, the master would be fined.
Fuck. I'm trying not to bitch, just be like, fuck off.
Yep. Masters may chain and beat slaves, but may not torture or mutilate them.
Right, I'm guessing that's going to be a key one here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Masters who killed their slaves could be punished. Could be punished.
Yep.
And if anyone attacked and injured a slave, which made them incapable of working, the offender would have to pay a fine to the master. So essentially, and this is where it's messed up, if you had money and you did any of the above, you could just pay a fine.
You'd just pay a fine
and
live with the knowledge that you probably enjoyed being a fucking terrible person.
Yeah, they just threw money at it.
Yeah.
And it's all
horrible. A bit gross.
It is. It's not nice at all.
Well, we must protect the assets. We must protect the profits.
Yep. Then closer to home, Delphine's mother died. So a lot of men, including her uncle and father, would have had relations with women of colour who were concubines. They'd have children, even marriage between the white men and enslaved women. And the men were pretty open about it. So after Delphine's mother died, her father then started seeing a free woman of colour, Sophie Musante.
A free woman?
Yeah.
Exciting.
Yes.
So she actually had a choice.
So she had a choice, yes. So Sophie was what they would call back then. So this is what the actual term is what they would use. And we know this is obviously not used now. Was quadroon or quarteroon, which was a person with one quarter African / Aboriginal and three quarters European ancestry.
So this is interesting. I remember my mum in the 90s coming home and being upset because somebody had asked her, and I think it was this.
Really?
Yeah. That's one of my first like core memories of my mum is different.
Yeah.
To like a lot of the people here. It's something we've all experienced. My mum experiences it a lot. We do a lot of this, like, what are you?
Yeah.
And people needing to understand exactly, okay, so you are 1/8 this and 1/8 that. And we'd be like, actually, she's just done her DNA test. And she's 16% North Indian.
Yeah.
And like 8% Nigerian and 6% Bantu.
Yeah.
If you really want to get involved in this, you know, there's a lot. You know, I'm always very proud to be like, yeah, I'm Trinidadian, like this is who we are. You know, you see the look at first, you see the look that you look a bit different, but I can't quite put my finger on it.
And around, like, here are you,
and you sort of go and you're sort of like, how are they going to approach this then? And sometimes I enjoy it, sometimes I have no patience for it, and there's the, oh, so where are you from then? Norwich. Oh, but where are you like from? Like, oh, well, grew up in Croydon, actually, like moved here. And then they're like, oh, Croydon. That's so, but like, where are you? You look like you've got a little something. Oh, okay. Yeah. What you actually want to know is what's my ethnicity? It's other.
It's other.
It is other. Yeah. Officially, particularly with the NHS.
You are other.
I am other.
Isn't that a lovely thing to have to put
it's
down
fucking
yourself, right?
Shit. It's been terrible.
Yeah.
Like, it's been really irritating. Yeah, and then you sort of were, and then, oh, we're Trinidadian. Oh, well, I've been to Jamaica once.
No.
Well, that's not the same.
Same place.
And there'll be at least six people out there listening to this that'll be like, oh, and can relate. So I already feel for this woman.
Yeah. I think also, historically and in context, it was probably for his relations. So his children, they were probably not happy about this, because if you've got a free, liberated woman of colour who is now having
it's
a relationship.
It's not a precedent they want to encourage.
No, exactly. No. So
she's muddying the bloodline.
Yep. So they had a child together.
I'm so proud of this woman.
Yep. And even more interestingly, Delphine and her brother Louis were the godparents of their new half-sister. And what may have angered Delphine even more so, the child was named Delphine McCarty.
Oh, no.
Mm.
Oh, that's a bit awkward, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, so there's probably a lot of unresolved rage there.
Okay. So something's brewing, and it's racial.
Yes.
Right.
This was the background Delphine grew up in. So politically, morally, pretty horrible stuff in there.
Yeah, and I guess being high society, there are sort of these extra expectations.
Yeah. But no one could have expected what she did when she was a slave owner herself. So she was married off when she was just 13 to Don Ramon de Lopez y Angulo.
Don Ramon.
It's a very nice name. This was one hell of a double barrel. He was a high-ranking Spanish royal officer. Don Ramon was twice the age of Delphine at 35. He was already a widow at this point, as he lost his wife on the way to Louisiana. And in those days, if you were over the age of 12, you were deemed good to go.
It's a whole issue in itself, isn't it?
Yep.
There's so much trouble in this whole package. But yep, okay, 13, married to 35-year-old.
So he had to ask permission from the Spanish royalty to marry her. And as the response was taking so long, he did it anyway.
Oh.
Yeah, so 7 months later he got his reply and it was no.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
Not sure I understand.
Oh, sorry, Siri.
Siri didn't like that either.
No, she didn't.
Wow.
So he had to go back to Spain to answer for his crime, and he ended up getting exiled to the border of France to do an office job, which he wasn't very happy about.
Oh, that's interesting. So they exiled him to France?
Yeah.
From America?
So he went from America back to Spain, and they were like, you bad boy.
So he took him out of the country.
Yeah, anyway. And then he had to go to France to work an office job.
Right.
Which he hated. Delphine, in the meantime, went and to the palace in Spain.
Right.
And apparently she blew away the queen's beauty, that the queen, without even asking her what she wanted, was like, you can have whatever you want.
Oh, wow.
You're so beautiful. You can have whatever you want. And she asked for him to be pardoned, in which he was.
So she did love him. She cared for him.
Yeah.
Or she cared for his status.
Yeah, I suppose so. So during his exile, Delphine had obviously gone back, right? So he'd been pardoned. Right. Then he was sailing back because she was waiting for him in Havana. But on his way back, he hit a sandbank. The ship hit a sandbank and he died.
No way.
So then a few days after he died, she gave birth to their child.
Oh, no.
Yeah, a baby girl called Marie Borgia Delphine Lopez y Angulo de la Candelaria.
I feel so sad for her when she goes to
fill out a form.
Yeah, she goes to reception and they make it, you know, they do the dots. The teacher's there like, oh, fuck's sake. Does her 12 names. Everyone, you know, all the Amy's and Zoe's in the class are laughing, and Marie, blah, 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 just read a shirt. She's there for hours joining up those dots to write her name. Poor kid.
It was a mouthful. So she was nicknamed Boquita. I think that sounds quite cute. A little snack.
What does that mean?
Cheesy snack.
You're a cheesy snack.
And so Delphine and little Boquita headed back to New Orleans. 4 years later, Delphine was married again. This time to Jean Blanc. They were married on Delphine's 20th birthday on March 19th, 1807, just a few weeks after her mother had passed away. Jean was a banker, merchant, lawyer, legislator. He was mates with pirates. And of course, he had lots and lots of money. But he was also a savvy businessman who was active in the slave trade. Some thought he saw Delphine's inheritance as an opportunity. He received a dowry of $33,007.
Whoa.
But they also inherited a downtown plantation on the banks of the Mississippi River, 52 enslaved people, livestock and farm equipment, and Delphine's father then gave her another plantation and an additional 26 enslaved people, as well as a wedding gift. Right now, that inheritance would be worth over $2 million. So it's not huge, but for someone in your 20s, ka-ching! Together, they moved into a large house on Royal Street in New Orleans, which was later called the Villa Blanc. So they got busy filling the house with kids. They soon had four siblings for Boquita. So this is a bit odd, like...
Are they all called Marie?
Marie Louise Pauline, Marie Marie Laurie, Marie Louise Jeanne, and Jean Pierre Pauline Blanc.
What is that about? That's uninventive. Although, I'm looking at girls' names, maybe I should just consider my own.
Perhaps. Because you would be Danny Senior.
Danny. It's not inventive, is it? Also,
There's fun in names, right?
Yeah, but why have they done that?
I don't know.
Dinner time must be terrible.
Marie, yes, yes, yes. They lived in a true upper class life. They split their time between their city mansion and their plantation. They never lifted a finger. They mingled with the elites, and of course, they were waited on hand and foot by enslaved people. But seemingly, the happy, child-filled marriage wasn't at all what it seemed. In 1816, Jean Blanc passed away, leaving 28-year-old Delphine to settle his estate.
She's not having much luck, is she?
Well, you know, in the last loving gesture, Jean has left Delphine with debts totalling over $160,000.
Oh, no.
$2.5 million in today's money.
Oh, no.
So she had to surrender the family home to the courts and spent the next 10 years auctioning off Jean's properties and possessions, including enslaved people, to try and pay off his debts. She did keep some things to herself, though, including some of Jean's slaves. Interestingly, records show that around 8 of these enslaved people all died within 5 years of Delphine signing the papers to keep them. The cause of death was written every time as unknown. Which isn't a great start.
It's suspicious as fuck, isn't it?
Missing minerals? 99% of us are. Concentrace Daily Mineral Powder helps restore what your body's missing, naturally supporting mood, energy, and immunity. Get yours now at TraceMinerals.com. You eat well, you work out, but did you know 99% of Americans are still mineral deficient? That's where Concentrace Daily Mineral Powder comes in. It's your daily foundation for better mood, natural energy, immune support, and nervous system balance. Formulated from nature and backed by science, it's a simple habit that makes a big impact. Because your body doesn't make minerals, and today's food and water don't supply enough, with Concentrace, you'll feel the difference. Go to TraceMinerals.com and start with minerals. Start with Concentrace.
And then, in a horrible swing of luck for her future victims, Delphine's father died, leaving her a massive inheritance. This is also wild. So at this point, Delphine's half-sister was also old enough to receive her inheritance. Remember that she's a free woman of colour, and she was left $5,000 and 2 slaves.
Oh, charming.
Yeah. I can't get my head around that concept. That
well, I just wonder, and I probably don't want to know this, but what's the monetary value of, so like she was left $5,000 and 2 slaves. What's the monetary value?
Slaves were usually sold for around $2,000.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
For a person who is essentially priceless, how do you quantify how much a person is worth? You shouldn't, you can't. It's a lot to take in.
It just seems so alien that you would put a price on someone's head like that. Like, you're buying something to make your life easier. Like, I don't know, like, you're just purchasing something to assist you, and you've paid that one price, and that then there is your property for forever. It's just a horrible, horrible thing to think about. I say it's alien to us, but slavery had been a thing for thousands of years, and it's just, it's madness that it even existed. Oh, just it's horrible, horrible, horrible. Mm. So things were looking up for Delphine. She had money, she had the lifestyle, and now she was going to find love for the third time.
Oh, good for her.
In 1825, she met 23-year-old physician and chiropractor Dr. Louis Lelaurie.
Oh, so she'd gone for a younger man this time.
Yeah, she was in her 30s.
Cougar.
But apparently back then she was like deemed as an old...
Oh, yeah, she'd have been an old bag by then, hadn't she?
She was 37 and he was 23. He was an up-and-coming doctor, well, physician, and said that he could straighten out a hunchback. That was like his thing. That was his
great
skill. And Delphine's son had a crooked back, and she reckoned that he needed to be straightened. So, well, yeah. So they went to see Dr. Louis. And a love affair bloomed. My great auntie had a hunchback, Auntie Jean, and she was terrifying. I shouldn't
because
laugh.
Of the hunchback.
She's going to come haunt me. No, yeah, but also because of her eyes would just pop out of her face.
Oh God!
And me and my sister actually were talking about this just the other day. I remember me and my sister were with my dad, and we were in Woolworths. Remember Woolworths?
I love Woolworths.
We see Auntie Jean in there, and she comes over. Bear in mind, my mum and dad haven't been together for years, and she hasn't seen him in a long time. And she goes, "Hello, Michael. Caught you getting fat."
laugh about that all the time. We laugh whenever it pops into conversation. She was a terrifying woman. That was brutally honest.
That is made better by the fact you've sort of described her as looking like Quasimodo. Yeah, well,
that's how my brain remembers her, because that's, as a child, that is how I saw her.
Yeah.
She probably didn't look as bad as my
bells.
Anyway, she took her little boy to see Dr. Louis, and they got very interested in one another, and she would help him out quite a lot. So she helped him settle into his new life in New Orleans and helped him become part of the city and get a social life, and they became very, very close. He would often write back to home telling them that he's met this woman and she's very friendly, and they said, oh yeah, keep her as a friend, you know, she sounds like she's in a good position. And his family back home didn't realise that it was a little bit more than friends.
Oh.
Because she was an older woman, people thought it was strange for her to be going out with a much younger man, especially with a less social standing. But things got a bit more complicated when she became pregnant with his child out of wedlock.
Oh, damn.
Mm-hmm. So they pushed through and they soon were married. With her huge wealth, she bought two empty lots on Royal Street and had a two-story mansion built, complete with slave quarters, later named the LaLaurie Mansion. The mansion was in her name, and her husband had little to do with the actual running of the home. Standard.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Delphine, like most women at this time, kept slaves to help run her household, and it was actually well known that she was very polite to them in public. So much so, it shocked her neighbours and fellow elite socialites. And at parties, she was seen giving them small glasses of wine. So it came across as her caring, that she'd give them just a little dribble and pass it to them in front of people.
Wow.
And they were like, okay. Unfortunately, Delphine's third marriage was not the success she'd hoped it to be. In 1832, she petitioned the courts for a separation from Dr. Louis after claiming that he had assaulted her in front of a witness. He didn't contest and moved out of the LaLaurie mansion and into a house nearby, leaving Delphine and her slaves all alone. And it's about to get nasty.
Right.
So remember when I just said that Delphine regularly shocked her friends by being super nice to her slaves? Well, people were pretty surprised, but they also thought it was kind of suspicious, especially because rumours were circulating throughout New Orleans society about the strange things she would put her enslaved people through. Like I said before, there were codes put in place in New Orleans that protected enslaved people from cruel punishment. For us, it's really confusing time to look back on, because white people were very happy to keep enslaved people in their homes and work with them for all they had. But they were also pretty unanimously deciding that you can't treat them that badly. That kind of makes no sense.
Yeah, it's that literally nowhere.
There is
no
way. Yeah, but that was the law. This meant that when people would go and visit Delphine in her mansion, they noticed when her slaves didn't look so good. Harriet Martineau, an English sociologist, visited New Orleans around this time and was apparently told by a friend that Delphine's slaves looked singularly haggard and wretched.
Oh dear.
Rumours were swirling around the town, and it was said that she kept her cook chained to the stove, that she was keeping secret slaves locked away somewhere so her husband could practice Haitian voodoo medicine on them. It wasn't uncommon for doctors to test out medical procedures on slaves, though I can imagine if anywhere to find out, it would also have been frowned upon, because they kept it behind closed doors.
Right.
People claimed that one enslaved man was so scared of Delphine that he threw himself out of a window to avoid whatever she had in store.
Good God.
There was also word on the street that Delphine whipped her own daughters if they ever tried to help the enslaved people in the household or if they attempted to feed them. The tales coming out of LaLaurie household were so rife that at one point a lawyer was sent to the mansion to remind Delphine of the laws for the upkeep of enslaved people. And he had a look around to see if any of the rumours were true, but he couldn't find any evidence of mistreatment, and he was also entranced by her charm and beauty and felt as though he had no reason to be worried, so he left.
But not long after the lawyers visited, reports started to circulate that Delphine had killed a young enslaved girl. And sadly, the rumours were true. 12-year-old Leah had been brushing Mistress's hair, but it hit a snag. It's hair, it's going to do that. Delphine flew into a fit of rage. She was grabbing the whip and chasing Leah through the house. Terrified, Leah ran up to the roof to escape Delphine and horribly fell to her death.
That's so sad.
Yeah.
And also, fuck you, Delphine.
Trying to hide what happened, Delphine attempted to bury Leah's body in her garden, but when she was found, she was charged with mistreatment and ordered to pay $300 and sell 9 of her slaves. In the eyes of the authorities, justice had been served, but when no one was looking, she just bought back the slaves. So $300 for killing a little girl.
Right. Yep. Okay. So actually, when I asked how much is a slave worth, it's $300 for a 12-year-old girl.
The funeral registers in New Orleans also told some grim stories. During 1830 and 1834... 12 deaths were registered at 1140 Royal Street, including the cook and laundress Bonne and her 4 children, Juliet, Florence, Jules and Leotine. All deaths were either listed as cause unknown or were stated to be caused by some kind of infectious disease that was rife at the time. But the years of rumours and hearsay were about to come to a head. On the 10th of April, 1843, a fire broke out in the kitchen of the LaLaurie mansion on Royal Street. Smoke could be seen throughout the neighbourhood and fire marshals were alerted to the blaze. A neighbour of Delphine's, Judge Jacques François Canoge, was one of the first to arrive at the scene and started to help the LaLaurie household move their valuables out of the house. Delphine's priority here was her belongings, not her slaves. As more neighbours and the fire marshals turned up, the house was a flurry of activity with the citizens helping move furniture and priceless items and the marshals trying to put out the fire and figure out what the enslaved cook was trying to tell them. The cook had started the fire, explaining it was an attempt of suicide as that was a better fate than what awaited her upstairs. Hearing the whispers, the neighbours went to the judge to tell him that they were concerned about some of the stuff that the cook was saying, and if it were true, that there were probably still people up in the mansion locked up whilst the house was burning. So Judge Canoge asked Dr. Louis, Delphine's estranged husband, who had arrived at the blaze, if he could make sure that all the captive enslaved people could be escorted from the building, to which he said, quote, "There are those who would be better employed if they would attend to their own affairs instead of officiously intermeddling with the concerns of other people."
What the fuck does that mean? Is that basically no?
Yes.
Fuck off.
Weirded out by this and definitely seeing a giant red flag, Judge Canoge gave the neighbours orders to break down the doors of the attic.
Good.
The scene that they were all met with was something even the worst rumours couldn't have prepared them for. Now, reports about what Madame LaLaurie was doing to her slaves vary. This was almost 200 years ago. But anyway you look at it, Delphine was doing some seriously fucked up shit. As well as the dead bodies of her victims, there were reports of enslaved people wearing thick iron collars lined with spikes. Some had been suspended by their necks and their limbs had been stretched out and torn. The victims were emaciated, most unable to stand or walk. Some reports stated that a woman was found wrapped in her own intestines, another with their mouth filled with feces and then sewn shut.
Oh my God.
Others had been shut into small cages. Their bones had been broken in order to fit them in. A man had a chunk of his head cut out so you could visibly see his brain.
Why?
For years, Madame LaLaurie had been torturing the enslaved people she held captive in her home, whipping them, gouging out their eyes, poking holes in their skulls, seemingly for her own amusement and pleasure. She had been murdering innocent people in the most horrific ways, and she had been getting away with it. But finally, the door had opened on her gruesome mutilations and the people of the neighbourhood were angry. The helpful group of neighbours shifted into an angry mob and the LaLaurie mansion was stormed. People began smashing whatever they could get their hands on until there was little else left in the house beside the walls. They ransacked the grounds too, exposing more graves dug by Delphine. Well, sadly, probably by the enslaved people of the household.
Oh my God.
That contained bones of previous slaves that she had callously tortured and murdered. I think this next bit is fucked up. Well, I don't, it makes me feel deeply uncomfortable. They were obviously trying to prove a point to show what she'd done. So what they did was the enslaved victims that had been tortured and that they'd obviously saved from the attic were then taken to the local jail where they were put on public viewing so people could see what she'd done. And it was reported that 4,000 people visited the station to look at Delphine's victims. Like, there's one thing being tortured and locked in an attic and...
And then just put on display it wasn't humiliating enough. Also, like, did they receive medical treatment? Like, was any...
I don't know.
That's no better. That's no better.
I think they were trying to prove a point or to say, this is terrible. Like, this is what's been happening. This is what Delphine has done.
It's not okay. Still not treating these people like people.
No.
You don't treat people like that. You treat property like that. Oh, look, so-and-so broke this chair.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, I might leave it here to show mum later because, you know, they break the chair. And it's like, as a fucking person with a piece of their head missing, are you joking?
Yeah. When I read that, it made me feel so, I mean, this whole story makes me feel uncomfortable, but that was kind of like, oh, you're supposed to be helping these people. It's not
backwards.
It is. It's sickening. But in the mist.
Missing minerals? 99% of us are. Concentrace Daily Mineral Powder helps restore what your body's missing, naturally supporting mood, energy, and immunity. Get yours now at TraceMinerals.com.
Out of this chaos, where was Delphine? She had broken the law. Her extreme cruelty and murder of innocent people warranted her arrest, but Delphine and her family were nowhere to be seen. So, unbelievably, Delphine rode out of town in a coach and not even the mob could stop her. In the rush that followed the judge's discovery, Delphine called for her enslaved coachman to bring her carriage. He obliged and she simply stepped in and drove away. They did their usual after-lunch ride, but this time she didn't return. The angry mob tried to clutch onto the horses so they couldn't get away, but they couldn't hold them back. He drove Delphine down to the docks of the New Orleans Navigation Company on Lake Pontchartrain, where she boarded a boat and fled. She would never be seen on US soil again. Unfortunately, upon the coachman's return, he was murdered.
By who? Why?
The angry mob.
Why did they murder him?
Because he helped her escape.
Yeah, but he had to do what he was told.
I know. It's not okay.
Everyone's a dick in this story. Every single person.
She made her way to Paris, along with her estranged husband, Dr. Louis. Her children even visited her. Eventually, Dr. Louis left her to move to Havana, but Delphine didn't care because her children were moving to Paris to live off her wealth and to be together as one happy family. Madame LaLaurie died in Paris on the 7th of December, 1849, at the age of 62.
Madame LaLaurie is a massive C unit. I don't even give a shit.
Yeah,
she just lived in Paris and they just let her. Paris, you're a dick as well. Not right now. You probably redeemed yourself by now. But at that time, the entirety of Paris, knowing that she's there, dicks.
Well, you say, I mean, obviously, Paris is quite a fair way from New Orleans. But it is said that when she was on the boat going over there, there were whispers on the ship about this woman. And she was talking to this young man who took an interest in her because she didn't go to Paris at the same time as her husband. So she was just talking to this guy. And then when he said, there's another lady called LaLaurie that was awful. I heard some horrible stories about her. And then he figured out that it was her because they were from the same place. And he was like, okay, I don't want to talk to you anymore. So it was getting out.
What's the point though? Like, they have to live by this French code. She's obviously, like, broken it. They'd have only just made her pay a fine anyway. They wouldn't have fucking done anything anyway, would they?
I know. It was either a fine or a 1-year prison sentence, which is just, you know, for murder.
And technically, she didn't even murder them.
No. She would probably have got a fine.
Everything about this is really bad.
Yeah. So she died at the age of 62 and she did not pay for her horrific crimes at all. The LaLaurie mansion was burnt to the ground that night and a new house was constructed on the grounds in 1838 and is the same building that stands today. Over the years, it has been a high school, a furniture shop, a building full of flats, a refuge for young people and a bar. It was even owned by Nicolas Cage at one point.
But of course.
Yeah. But he sold it in 2010. And its current owner, Michael Whalen, who is making a film about Madame LaLaurie. And yes, they're going to film it in the house. I also heard it was a bank as well, which was fitting because of her being a really rich person. So, ugh. This case has turned into kind of folklore. And she was turned into a character for American Horror Story, as we know, and is the centre of many ghost stories in New Orleans. There are a ton of tours. When I was doing research, most of the resources were ghost story videos, which I didn't watch because I was like, "That's please stop.
Nightmare.
I was like, give me some useful resources. This is just you know. So her crimes get gorier and more salacious with every retelling. There's a lot of untrue things circulate, embellishments, yes. And there are some unreliable resources. But it is important to remember the victims of her terrible crimes. Many innocent enslaved black men, women and children lost their lives in the most awful ways. And she probably wasn't the only slave owner who treated innocent people like this. She was the one that got caught. Well, she didn't really get caught, but she just got found out.
She just got exposed.
Yeah, she got exposed. It's important that we remember this story for what it is so it can never happen again. And that was the life and crimes of Madame LaLaurie.
My God. Carl, this is worse than a lot of the modern ones.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Well, yeah, because in the old days, horrible shit happened all the time. They don't have, like, so many things that we take for granted today, like just society.
Just like other things to do apart from kill people.
Yeah. And, you know, we think back to some cases like in the 80s where they didn't have, you know, mobiles or ways of communicating to help solve cases quicker or track down criminals. This is like 200 years ago.
And if this fire hadn't have happened, she could have carried on for God knows how long.
Yeah, they had no way of, like, intel on what was going on.
Well, I also, like, I guess nobody really cared enough.
No.
Like, it speaks for itself, doesn't it? The house was burning and the neighbours were busy helping take out the furniture rather than making sure all the people got out alive.
Well, I think they were asking her if anyone needed rescuing and she was like, no, get my furniture.
She's
the C word.
She's a C-bomb.
But
I hated this story, actually.
Did you?
Very interesting, like the history of it. I've always found the history of New Orleans, to be fascinating. It's got such a rich history.
But I find it fascinating with an underlying ick.
Yeah, it's
how,
like, that's just it.
It's like, oh my God, this is fascinating because it's. You know, it was so long ago.
And so, like, much dark stuff has happened there.
But you also feel it's icky. It's horrible to listen to.
Yeah.
And, or it's horrible to learn about normal back then. I was talking about it last night at dinner time. Because Phil, by the way, is like fully caught up on the podcast.
I mean, thanks, Phil, but about time, mate.
But we were talking about how people's realities are different and it's mad to think about other people's realities and how that back then was normal. Like, that was normal. That way of living. And it's just like, what the fuck?
Oh. Yeah. It's something that I think about quite often. Mm. So, there's one of the legends of our family history is that one of the founders, I guess, of our family line was an exiled nobleman from France who got sent to Grenada and owned plantations. and he was a horrible, wicked man and would ride around on a big white horse and beat his slaves and father children by these slaves, illegitimate children. He was just raping and beating. And that's where some of us, you know, like that's how our line got started. Free those slaves. But like, I guess everybody has that sort of legend. I don't know if that has ever been factually, you know, traced in sort of writing. But yeah, and when you think about it, like that's horrific.
Yeah.
That's horrific. But like our, you know, our family line has so much joy in it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always sort of, yeah, counteracted with this horrible suffering. Yeah, it's just, yeah, wild. This whole thing, the whole thing.
Yeah. Ah, so yeah.
I think everybody needs a big drink, a big sit down.
A big sip of something.
And maybe a nap. That was just a lot, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I think you did a good job.
Thank you.
We've tried something different today.
Yeah, I hope that you enjoyed it.
Let us know. Have we actually ever talked about the fact that we've got an Instagram now?
We've got an Instagram. At Devils in the Dark. We don't run it though. We personally aren't logged into it.
We just provide content every now and again.
Yeah, our face.
But please do let us know because
we are told of the messages that are sent to us.
We are involved.
Yeah.
Yeah. So please do. Let us know at Devils in the Dark.
Next time on Devils in the Dark with me, Helen Anderson.
And me, Danny Howard. We're looking at the sadistic cannibal killer obsessed with Breaking Bad. It's Stefano Brizzi.
Subscribe or follow to make sure you never miss an episode of Devils in the Dark.
In the meantime, if you've been affected by any of the themes in this episode, please do check out the description for lots of helpful resources.
Special thanks to Woodcut Media and our wonderful producers at Audio Boom Studios.